With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod this week, brought to you by the Box Set Pod. Why don't you pop us a review if you haven't yet? The reviews mean everything to us. When we started this podcast over a year ago, about a year and a half ago, we were obviously begging for reviews because reviews mean love, and they mean the more people who listen, the more people who care about it, the higher up the podcast charts it gets, the better the podcast will get for various reasons. But mostly, it's just to imagine Jamie doing his day job on a grey Thursday afternoon, and then he sees that somebody said, "I love Jamie," in a review. Imagine what that is going to do to his life. That's more love than his mother gave him in 35 years.
That would make me skip to the photocopier and do a little, you know, photocopy of my bum.
Exactly. So make Jamie photocopy his bum. Click review on iTunes. Click a review there and pop us a review. Thank you very much. This week, a box set discussion tonight around Man Seeking Woman. Is that what it's called?
Yes, it is indeed, Harold.
I've not seen it. Jamie has, as you can tell. Others are going to join us to discuss it. Should we bother with it? That's the question. I don't know if I can be bothered. I've got enough to watch. Will they be able to persuade me?
What's good about this debate is that it's not a very well-established or that well-known a show, so it's nice to introduce something that might be refreshingly different and you've not heard of yet. A lot of people haven't heard of yet to your smorgasbord of TV.
Exactly. Jamie, I've fallen in love with The West Wing again.
What? What were you up to?
It's been on, right? I work at home a lot. Sometimes I want some background noise when I'm doing something that isn't noisy. And I just sort of joined in halfway through season 5, and it was downloading one show a week. And I've caught up. And today, bearing in mind that I've got the box set in the DVD cupboard next to the TV, I've got the full box set. Nonetheless, I spent £60 today on iTunes by getting the box set, by getting the digital copy. I then had to explain this to my wife, and I secretly recorded the conversation.
Do you know what I spent £60 on today?
What?
I bought on iTunes the entire West Wing.
Why? You've got it in there.
No, but I don't want to put it in the DVD player. Do you want to watch some?
No.
the sort of disappointment. It's like she doesn't even argue. She knows it. She's given. She's lost this battle when she married you.
Exactly. Oh dear. But you know what it is? It happens again. You know, like we keep saying about. It takes a few episodes to... we say this about every series. It takes 4 episodes to get into it. But with The West Wing, I think it takes a certain time before the penny drops and you go, this is so good, it's in my blood, you know? And going back to it, I did the same thing. I went back and initially I kind of went, hey, it's looking a bit old. Aaron Sorkin's banging his liberal drum. And then, a few episodes in, I just love the characters so much that, again, I can't believe that they're not real. And I need to watch it always, forever, until the day I die. It's the best box set ever. And anyone who gives up on it is a fool. That's what I say. Marsha joining us shortly, as is Matt Wandless, not Mad Wandless. In fact, should we get Matt on now?
Yeah, get him on.
Should we get Marsha on as well? Marsha, are you there?
I'm here. I was really laughing at you and Jamie earlier. That was funny.
What, about the West Wing?
No, before that, about...
About fools who give up on the West Wing for silly, silly reasons.
That was funny because you went, I think anyone who gives up is a fool. We're going to patch Marsha in soon.
That's correct. And speaking of fools, heavy breathing as usual, live from London, it's Matthew Wandler.
It's because I'm lifting things.
What are you lifting?
Washing clothes horses.
Clothes horses. Isn't that the job of the servants?
It's Tuesday night. I give them the night off so they don't make noise during the podcast.
Right, okay.
I've had to let too many of them go for that. It's getting ridiculous.
Right.
We've got a friend who got drunk and did a whiz on a clothes horse once. Remember that?
No.
Wow.
I won't say his name, but he was drunk and there was clothes on this clothes horse, obviously, and it was near a radiator and he just decided to wee on it.
I'm going to piss on that.
A similar thing happened to me in Tenerife once when my wife apparently woke up to find me weeing on her flip-flops. That was a bad night.
I thought you
night.
Were about to tell us an inappropriate story about your wife then.
Until that point, which was when it was about 2 years ago, I'd only ever laughed my head off at the idea that people can stand up and go and wee in a cupboard or whatever. But then I did it. Yep. Do not drink, kids. And just reminding me of another story, because Jamie's laughing at somebody else, I've got one about Jamie if you want to hear it.
I've never weed on a...
No, you haven't weed on a cupboard, but when we first went away as a group of friends...
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to tarnish my opinion of Jamie.
When we first went away at the age of about 19 as a group of friends, we went to Barcelona and we hired a house on the coast down there, and it was great. You could sit on the roof and look out to sea. And it was our first experience of European measures of spirits. So you order a Jack Daniels and Coke, and it's mostly Jack Daniels and a shot of Coke, you know. Anyway, we also had a friend called Phil Thornley, who was Jamie's childhood neighbour. Jamie and Phil Thornley were sharing the same room. And Phil Thornley was mad about camcorders. And Phil Thornley, who was also drunk, fell asleep whilst filming with his camcorder. What he managed to capture was the moment that Jamie woke up, sat on the edge of his bed and was sick into his sink violently. Phil, you spot the moment when the camera begins to move. Phil wakes up and the first thing he does is point the camera more squarely at Jamie and start laughing like Frank Bruno. And you have half an hour of just this with Jamie going, "Thanks, Phil." For half an hour. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen, and due to the death of VHS, I think it's gone forever.
I had heat stroke.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Jack Daniels stroke.
Yeah. let's get some news, shall we? Should we find out what's going on the boxsetpod.com/news?
Let's do a big chunk of TV news. First of all, I just want to quick mention the TV BAFTAs took place on Sunday night. Wolf Hall picking up Best Drama, Best Leading Actor for Mark Rylance as Thomas Cromwell. Nice to see This Is England 90 picking up awards for Best Continuing Drama. Also supporting actress went to Chanel Cresswell. It's a very good performance from her in there. Anyone watch This Is England 90?
No.
Oh, it's epic. It's brilliant. It's
also nice to see Mark Rylance, who's been a huge theatre actor in London for his entire life, starting to do films. Because
he's having a corking time. Yeah, he's won an Oscar, a BAFTA, and he's in BFG. He plays BFG in the new Spielberg film.
What did he win an Oscar for?
He won an Oscar for Bridge of Spies.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Sly Stallone's dad got so miffed, he tweeted about how annoyed he was that this Englishman had won an award and his son missed out.
Wow.
Because he's a people of colour as far as Sly Stallone's dad was concerned.
But I do want to mention as well, during the BAFTAs...
By the way, that was a little shout-out to last week.
Has there been any fallout from last week?
No.
We continued to debate.
We continued to debate and we cut...
probably 40 minutes worth of
I was so glad to hear the sound of you talking fade out at the end of the podcast last week. Cry with joy.
We won't bring it up again, although I already have, so let's carry on.
Back to news. So there was a during the BAFTAs, while Wolf Hall won the award Best Drama, the director of Wolf Hall, Peter Kosminski, got up to take the award and gave a vitriolic, passionate speech in defence of the BBC ahead of the government's white paper publication. It's expected in the next few days, I think. And it's expected that this could recommend that the government takes a larger role in having a say in what the BBC editorially puts out and chooses to do in the future. And this means it could get rid of the trust. The BBC trust could be gone, and the independence of the BBC is under threat. And there was an amazing speech, got a standing ovation from the director of Wolf Hall. It's
watched by the BBC One audience, which is a big shame. But a lot of people gave it a shout out as well. A lot of people referred to it throughout the night as well, which is good.
Scary stuff. Also, light-hearted. If you like, in Game of Thrones, there's a really funny SNL sketch I put up there. They kind of took the Mickey out of the slow pace of some of the Game of Thrones plots. There is spoilers in it, so don't go and have a look unless you're up to date with the latest episodes.
Did anyone watch the latest episode? Episode 3.
I did.
Oh God, Jamie! You know, up until now, last week you mentioned that you thought it was quite slow, and I defended it. This week it really was 59 and a half minutes of philosophy, followed by again 30 seconds of something exciting happening.
It's because that's what happens in the books. As you get towards the end of the books, it's just like everything stopped.
Well, do you know what? I don't particularly mind that, but I think that these things are now made because the quality of the debate, of the philosophy, is still good, and the things, you can get lost in that world. The problem is it being released...
Oh, that's where it's different from the books.
Right. The problem is it's being released week on week, and these things are made. You really do get an exciting moment at the last minute, and having to wait another week without binge-watching it is so frustrating. It finished and I just went, well, that was shit.
One thing I do like about Game of Thrones, though, is that it's got some genuine funny moments in. Like, there's real, like, it has quite a lot of comic sort of breaks.
That's what I mean. The quality is great. It's just, it's not shit because of the quality. It's shit because you have to wait. And it's like, you're going to have to, when are networks and distributors going to realise that these things now, they must be given as a chunk? Otherwise, people are just going to go illegal. That's what's going
to
happen.
And that's the thing. Like, and I think Game of Thrones is a perfect example of a show that you need to watch. Like, I wouldn't recommend anyone watches it now until it's all finished so that you can binge it. Because it's almost should be watched in a binge format. It's perfect binge format material, and else outside of that, it's quite a frustrating watch, really.
So hard to wait, though.
Yeah,
it is tempting me back.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's one of the best. Matt, did you just do a wee?
Yes.
Oh no.
No, I didn't. I poured myself some squash. I'm sorry, I thought my mic was off. Sorry.
We'll replay that at the end of the podcast, and we will. You can
if you want
for
at the
yourself.
End of the podcast, I can do an actual wee for
no,
you.
No, it's all right.
If that was a wee, it was very good control of the prostate to stop the wee midstream.
Or a very bad prostate.
My prostate is strong as an ox.
Break a man's finger off.
Is that it for news?
That's your news.
Okay, it's chart time. So this is a chart that's compiled by our algorithm department, also known as Ben, and it is the downloads of all download, broadcast and retail charts around the world, taking into account both legal and illegal downloads, depending on where you are. It's a chart of a one of a kind, and at number 10 this week it's Flash. At number 9 it's Wolf Hall, mentioned by Jamie just then. At number 8 it's Doctor Who. At number 7 it's Suits. Difficult to get back into when they release a new series, I think, on Netflix, because it just seems a little bit weird. It's weirdly thinner on the ground than The Good Wife. It's almost like with The Good Wife, I don't care about these rich lawyers. And then with Suits, it's like they're rich lawyers who really care about wearing suits, and it's a bit more sexist. So I kind of I've learnt to care even less than I do about The Good Wife. Don't know if anyone's got any thoughts on that. No, clearly not. Number five. Who's just put me on speakerphone? Oh, there we go. Number five, Fear the Walking Dead. Anyone watching that yet?
No. Is it any good?
And this is the thing, as I said last week, that I think the latest series is meant to be brilliant. Like, first series was a bit ropey. This series, I'm hearing, is excellent. Like, they found the rhythm and the identity of the show separate of The Walking Dead.
Just remind me what the setup is.
So it's trying to, instead of starting with The Walking Dead from like a after the outbreak, this starts before the outbreak of the zombies and leads into another group of people and how they cope with this impending doom.
Is the first series not very good because they start years before the outbreak?
yeah.
Just someone going to work and coming home.
Downton Abbey's at number four this week, still
Good
riding
God,
high.
God, die, will you?
Night Manager is at number three. Jack, what a shame that Work Experience Boy Jack isn't with us this week, because at number two, it's Peaky Feckin' Blinders.
Series.
I watched the end of the first series of that the other day. It's really good.
Good. And at number one, Game of Thrones. Of course, that's going to be at number one for a long time. Right. Good. Thank you, Ben. And if you want to email us with your favourite box set at the moment, are we missing, you know, should there be something in that chart that isn't in the chart? Then pop us an email on any subject. We love receiving your emails. studio@theboxsetpod.com. Who can explain to me the premise of Man vs. Woman? Marsha's watched lots of it, yeah? Man vs. Woman, Man Seeking Woman. Marsha's watched lots of it. How many of you watched, Jamie?
I'm into the second series and about three or four episodes into the second series.
So I think Matt's watched the least out of the three of you, is that right?
I've watched one.
Okay, Matt, set it up for us.
So it begins with the current main character, Josh, splitting up with his girlfriend of 4 years, I think it is. It's literally they break up on her doorstep and he's leaving with his stuff. And then it's about him. It's about the fallout from that.
Okay. He's seeking a woman, is he?
Yeah, the title comes from him setting up his online profile on a dating app where it asks you, are you a man or a woman seeking a man or a woman?
Okay, good. And what do you think, Matthew?
Well...
Oh, hang on a minute. Context. Who's in it, Jamie? Where does this sit? Who's made it? What's the background of this?
Right, well, it's not that old. It's only 2 to 3 seasons in now. It's based on a book written by Simon Rich called The Last Girlfriend on Earth, which is a series of short stories. And it's a story, like he says. It stars Jay Baruchel as a 20-something man in a romantic comedy setting, and it takes romantic comedy tropes and lives them out to very literal extremes in a very absurd way. And it's got a great cast of people around it. Brilliant producers in Lorne Michaels from Saturday Night Live. Also someone called Jonathan Crissell, who's worked on a lot of stuff like Portlandia and Tim and Eric. So it's got a lot of really talented comic people surrounding it.
Did you write that down?
No, I didn't.
Gosh, he really
whips it out of his sock like a pistol.
Excellent prose sometimes, doesn't he, for such a little bone-idle human being. It's quite remarkable. Matthew, what do you think of this trope-ridden comedy genius quest?
I think that by what it is, unfortunately, it is inherently derivative and quite boring.
It's always good when Matt's the guinea pig. And
no, you know what? I'm lying. I loved it. Isn't it?
No.
I know how you like conflict on the show, but this is fucking great. This is really funny.
One episode in.
There is a sequence in this episode. Can I talk about it openly? We don't care about it, right? Literally, his girlfriend of 4 years starts dating again, and she starts dating Adolf Hitler, who has been secretly living in Argentina for the last 80 years. And he goes to this party, and there's fucking Hitler in a wheelchair dating his girlfriend, and everyone is treating it like this is incredibly normal.
And what I think is brilliant about it.
His character is called Josh Greenberg, and he introduces himself, and Hitler goes, I was watching this on the train on the way home, just shitting myself with laughter in front of 50 total strangers. It's so funny.
And what I think, and incidentally, Hitler's played by Bill Hader from Saturday Night Live and Trainwreck, and
great guy.
And which I had no idea. I just saw that in the credits after. I thought it has to be like a good improv comedian because he's so funny. But what I love about this show
just wait a second. I'm still getting over that joke.
It's so good. It's so funny. It's this poor little Jewish guy. I don't know if you know what's the name of the actor. Sorry, Jim.
Jay Baruchel.
I've seen him in like several things. Yeah, he's in 40-year-old Virgin, isn't he?
He's the voice of the boy in How to Train Your Dragon, by the way.
There you go. But he's always this kind of weedy character, and it's just. it's just brilliant to have him there kind of dealing with the fact that his girlfriend of 4 years who he's still in love with is like cooing over Hitler.
So what I love about this Marjorie, show,
I promise I was coming back to you, Marjorie. I'm so sorry. I don't often laugh out loud on trains, but I've just done the equivalent of that. And I've not seen it. Marsha, carry on.
What's so good about this show, and this is like a perfect example of this, is they take these bonkers conceits and they all play it so straight. So he's turned up to the party and he goes there thinking that they're going to get back together. He's like, oh, of course, this is why she invited me. I'll bring her favorite wine. And as they're walking up the stairs, his best friend, who's played by, what's his first name? I know his last name's Andre. Brilliant, really, really funny comic actor. And they're walking up the stairs and then he's like, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, it's so great of you to come with the new boyfriend. And he's like, new boyfriend. And he goes, yeah, Adolf. And Jane Baruchel's character goes, as in Hitler. And he's like, oh, cool. You know him.
That is what it does really well, like as a show. I mean, you can't beat Matt's description as summed up how good that show is when it's at its best. It's like, it takes these, you know, really extreme sort of absurd ideas, and it follows them through to, you know, it really goes for them. It goes hell to leather. Like the idea of there's an episode later on in the series where, you know, the idea when this relates to your wedding a bit, how when people have to go abroad to somebody's wedding, and so in this example, the wedding is held in hell, in actual hell. And it's just really clever stuff like that, but it follows through with it. And like one of the things I was worried about with it as a show was that having these kind of very sort of set kind of extremes, absurd settings could maybe you'd lose interest in the characters or not care about them enough because of that sort of sketch kind of style of it. But it's brilliant. You really actually care about his character. His sister's character is brilliant.
Yes.
And like you said, like his housemate, Eric Andre is the actor who plays him. He's just brilliant. And you really like get to know them and really enjoy them as like individual characters, even though they're in these extreme sort of worlds they've created.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it takes the crutch that things like Family Guy leans on very heavily, which is to just like go, what if this, for about a second, and then it, as Jamie says, it follows through on that idea.
That's nice, actually, because in Family Guy that actually gets incredibly tedious to do.
Exactly, and it plays out the entire scenario. So in this first episode, he's set up on a blind date by his sister, and his flatmate's saying, you should always ask how they look. And then they look across the street at this restaurant, and there is a troll in a dumpster. Family Guy, it would be like the troll would walk in the door and then it would snap back to reality and they'd play out the actual blind date. Mm. But this, you watch him have the entire blind date with a fucking troll. And And it is, it's like it's referred back to. The world has this wonderful elasticity about it, where it's like you're in a real situation, you're talking about stuff, they're talking about dating apps and all this kind of crap, and then suddenly something so totally outlandish happens, but the world just bends to let it fit into itself. And I cannot wait to watch more. This is exciting.
I've just never
and
heard...
Something else I think about that is that they make you, like, once you get to know the characters, they make you care about it as if it's a drama, but it's constantly based in the hilarity of how ridiculous it is. So later on, after you've kind of already fallen in love with the sister, they then have a couple of episodes where it's woman seeking man, and it's from her point of view. And there's one, again, you kind of figure out that this is going to happen from the first scene, so I don't think it's too much of a spoiler, but she has an affair with a married man, and there's all of the drama of having an affair with a married man, except the married man is Santa Claus. And so there's all the extra, like he runs Christmas, you know, he's really famous. Brilliantly, you know, and they take these scenes that would be really sexy and they're kind of having a sexy, but it's also like, it's Santa.
Do you have, Matthew, any criticism of it? Because I've never heard you speak about something without having pouring at least a few milliliters of scorn onto it.
I am drawing a blank.
Wow.
Wow, wow. Look at that.
Jesus Christ.
I have to say, on that line, I usually am never someone who discovers TV shows by myself. I always go on recommendations. This one I stumbled across. There's a Netflix type service here called Show Me, Shomi, and I was on it. I signed up for the free trial because I was trying to watch another TV show called The Last Man on Earth. That was the only place I could find it. And then I was like, oh, I need to have something else. Jay Baruchel, I saw him in This Is the End and really liked him. I'll watch it. And the first 5 minutes, there's a conversation between him and Eric Andre's character. And Eric Andre's his best friend, and he's just like this total dude bro. And he comes in, and at first I was like, oh no, this TV show is the worst. And then it went straight into the scene where he goes on the date with the troll. And I was like, no, it's the best. And I don't think I've ever had a TV show that I have, and Matt is perfect proof of this, that I have loved so furiously from one 30-minute episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sold.
That's the weird thing is, like you said, I haven't had anybody recommend this to me. I know it's not, but it's only had like two seasons. Marsha, you were the reason I watched it because you were the one who talked about it, just said you should definitely give it a go. But other than you, I've not heard any, like, and I do like look across TV reviews and stuff to see what's popular and what's doing well. I've not heard anything about this show.
No, I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
Which is very surprising given who's in it and who's behind it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure how well it's doing in ratings wise, but I'd be amazed if it's not doing well. And I'm so surprised that people aren't like screaming about how good the show is, especially when it's two seasons in. But
been given a third season, and that Lorne Michaels.
It must be doing all right then. It must be.
Is it Man Seeks Woman or Seeking?
Man Seeking. You really have
honestly, what's the matter with you?
Well, I'm just searching on iTunes and it's not on there either.
Man Seeking Woman.
Did you say it was on Amazon, Jamie? Because I need to find a way to get more of it.
Yeah, I believe you can access it on Amazon. That would be the route I would go down.
Thanks, Jamie.
And from a,
Jesus.
Can I add, from an activist point of view, very good on people of colour. Two of the four main characters, people of colour. Good one, Man Seeking Woman. And I feel like it's really good in that respect. There's one episode where they're all talking about this hot girl and everyone hitting on her, and then another character turns up, the sister, and is like, excuse me, you don't have to hit on her just because she's hot. I feel like constantly all the way through there's these little feminist, and anti-racist, anti-homophobic things that just drop in. There's so many.
This is what I was going to ask. Yeah, because the only thing I could say is that it's very male nerd heavy. It's very Judd Apatow-y in that sense in the first episode. But does that change?
It really. But even with that, when when he's going on the date with the troll, and when, and he's kind of, she's like, you know, but she's very smart, and it's sort of this like open your mind thing, because at first you think, oh, it's going to be really bad, and I feel like all the way through, in terms of mainstream shows, I think it might be the best in terms of all my, it doesn't ping my activism alarms, and on the contrary, it's constantly standing up for things, it's constantly not making those, yeah, it's brilliant, and loads of people of colour in it as well, which
I'd rather
is
say ethnic minorities, but that's fine. Oh, by the way, people of colour comes from Martin Luther King's speech, Citizens of Colour, he said in his favourite speech.
Maybe why it's agreed on as the phrase that we can all use.
Might be, but he was, you know, it's a long time ago.
I'm not
as well.
A big fan of Martin Luther King, to be honest.
No. Listen, I think that comedy's taking a very interesting step at the moment, and we've mentioned it the last couple of weeks on the podcast, but Kimmy Schmidt. I was saying about Kimmy Schmidt that it's unapologetic, and it seems to be taking leaps and bounds beyond the formulaic. There's a kind of belief that perhaps stems right back from French farce that comedy has to follow quite a specific structure in order for it to be funny. Like, you have to have a world that's quite rigid in order for the component parts of it to remain safe and therefore funny. So, like, the old thing of you follow a rule, like you walk along a pavement, and then if there's a hole in the pavement, that becomes funny. Well, what the comedies seem to be doing, that and the one that you're talking about, seems to be blowing the lid off of it slightly and following the writer's indulgence. It seems like perhaps studio interference and all of that stuff, this benefit in the digital world of small teams of people making something great that's then bought by a larger thing, seems to be working for that. And I want to do a shout out as well to Angie Tribeca. Has anyone watched any Angie Tribeca yet?
No, heard about it.
This is a new one. It just started sort of last week, and it's starring Rashida Jones from Parks and Rec. Who is, by the way, Quincy Jones's daughter. Interesting fact. It's starring her, female lead there, I think we should point out. There may be some people who are ethnic minorities in it, and people of colour as well. But it's written by Steve Carell, who is a white middle-aged man. This is a problem. It's not a problem. It's written by Steve Carell and it's directed by him, and it's bonkers. And I mean, it's airplane. It's airplane. It's like a police... what's the word that... Mel uses it a lot to describe, you know, when it's they follow a case. What's it called?
Procedural.
A procedural. It's a police procedural. It's like the closest thing that I could compare it to is the Leslie Jones one from the '80s.
Police Squad.
Yeah, Police Squad. I'm getting everything wrong. What's his name? Leslie Nielsen. Jesus. Rashida
could
Jones.
Could have been worse.
Leslie Nielsen. so anyway, it's really, really nuts. Like, very little happens in terms of plot, and just really, really lame gags happen all the time. Or if someone says, can you speak up a bit, you know, the other person will scream to the point that their clothes fly off or whatever. it's mental, and it is quite difficult. I haven't had the same relationship with it as you have with this. It's because, in the same way as Airplane, I always found the silliness so silly that it didn't compel me to come back the next week. I knew what I was going to get. It was great. Didn't compel me to come back.
Well, it reaches critical mass, doesn't it? That kind of silliness.
Where you go, oh. But I think it's a sign, these three together, and probably other things, are a sign that that comedy is really starting to flower in lots of interesting directions, and that is great news. Yeah,
it's interesting you say that. Go on, sorry, Jimmy.
No, so you go for it, Matt.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if that necessarily contradicts what you were saying about rules, because I do think that comedies still need to have that. They have to have their, and they can make their own rules. Mm. But they do need to have a consistency about the world. And I think that that's what the problem is with something like, and I'm going to mention it again, Scrubs, is that it's, it breaks its own barriers as it goes on to get laughs.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think what I'm saying is that the set of rules that was created has remained the same for a while. So
when
farce was created, you know, French farce, everything followed the same set of rules. And it feels like in the Big Bang Theory world and Family Guy and all of those things, they kind of, nothing surprising in terms of those rules has come along. And
did you really enjoy like the sort of the really good British 90s stuff, like the Chris Morris stuff?
Totally, for the same reason, but different, you know, in a satirical way. But definitely, yeah, amazing stuff.
Have you ever seen Jam? Has everyone seen Jam?
Good.
Okay. Well, in that case, let's not do that if everyone's seen it.
Well, someone might not. There's only.
I bet Jack hasn't seen it. He was probably only a couple of years old when it was made.
Jack's barely used a television, let's face it. Well, brilliant. I am going to find a man-seeking woman.
You've got to find it. And I think that, like you said, there's a lot of really good stuff around the moment. There's a lot of channels empowering comics and creative people to work on stuff. FX is a great example of that. That's a channel that's done man-seeking woman. And, you know, the work they've done with Louis C.K., just giving him money and telling him, this is your money, make a show. Mm. And he's made such a fascinating... Louis is such an unusual show. It's not even an out-and-out comedy. It's very thoughtful in places. Stuff like that. And then you've got Netflix, which is just...
Chucking money at people.
Yeah, because Ricky Gervais, we're not always fans of him, but he did make a good point where he said, I can just go to Netflix. They'll let me do exactly what I want. And they've got an audience of 70 million subscribers or whatever it is.
Let me say this, though. It is a shame, though, that the people who are given that freedom are always... incredibly established, incredibly powerful people like Ricky Gervais and people who've been on Saturday Night Live for 10 years and Steve Carell and Tina Fey, you know.
Those people have feelers that go out far and wide. I mean, it's the same as it's ever been, but like the studios now don't dominate everything, and it's not all about demographic is, I think, the positive that we can take from that. Mm. And these people that you're talking about do want to foster new talent. Yeah. And I'm sure that there are writers and actors who have been found by these people through God knows how, what channels, who are now getting chances that they wouldn't otherwise have got, because these people can just go, this guy's got a great idea and I'm going to stand behind it and pitch it to Netflix.
I'm sure our studio knowledge full friend Ben will have something to add to this at some point in the future.
Well, yeah, I've got a very... positive view of it then.
Yeah.
And also, this is maybe first wave, you know? Like, first of all, the people with big money are still terrified. So first they give it to the Steve Carells and the Lorne Michaelses and the whoever's, and then that opens the door, you know, once maybe. People see the success of all these shows, it opens the door for other people
opens
to come through.
Opens the door finally for us. Here we go, everybody.
And the great thing about these kind of comedies is traditionally they don't cost much.
Mm.
So they can, risks can be taken on them.
Yeah. I mean, I think Louis C.K., his show costs, a season costs £200,000.
Wow.
$200,000 to make.
Wow.
And that's his budget to make 10 episodes, and he pulls it off.
Has everyone seen that as well?
Yeah.
Right. I've only seen the first episode. The new one, Horace and Pete, are we talking
about? No, Louis. Louis, yes.
I've seen the first episode of Louis.
I really think that might be one of the best box sets that's out there.
Jesus.
Yes.
In any genre. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I am incredibly, from my directorial past, I am incredibly scrupulous over anything that's improvised. And the first episode I thought was very good. There's just a potential... And this is why the 4-episode rule exists, because I hate people who say this, like Marcia. People always find their own reason. But my reason is there is a potential that it's not something that I'm going to completely love because it's so improvised. Mm. Which is interesting that he's now sort of gone to Mike Lee and got advice over Horace and Pete, I think. Especially as I asked Mike Lee a question once, and he said, that's an excellent question. Followed by, and security, could you escort him from the building, please?
Were you asking him what he wanted for lunch?
I asked him how my finger felt. Yeah, snapped it off. Anyway, great. Thank you very much. Good one tonight. I'm sold.
I have to say, when Matt said he didn't like it at the beginning, I was heartbroken.
Well, obviously that would have been a better podcast, and shame on you, Matt, for giving in so quick. That could have been
Marcia,
awesome.
Thank you for finding this. This is the equivalent of finding like a entire dinosaur skeleton when you're excavating to build a shopping centre.
I never find any TV. It's so exciting to me that I'm the first person to tell everyone I know about this
show. By the way, Dulé Hill is the name of an actor in The West Wing, who is superb. Charlie in The West Wing. Isn't he great, Jamie?
Yeah, I like Charlie.
He's a guest on the third week of the new podcast. There's a new West Wing podcast you should check out.
Molina's doing it, isn't he?
Josh Molina, who played Will in The West Wing, is hosting it, and they're talking through it all. It's really fascinating. It could be enough to get Marcia back into the damn thing. It's really interesting.
And can I tell you that I did download those two episodes I said I would, and I had two 13-hour train journeys, and I ended up having time to watch no TV in spite of all that.
Well, still waiting for it, and...
It's coming.
Yeah, well, you watching that and Jamie watching Chuck has become not funny anymore, so get on with it. But Matt did mention on our private chat room this week that he thought Dulé Hill in The West Wing was the poorest actor in The West Wing. He said that not only was he a poor actor, but it was testament to why people of colour should not be allowed on regular TV shows. That's what Matt said.
No, he did not say that.
He might not have said that. Yeah, I just imagined
him. You besmirched our sexy alarm.
Thank you very much.
Go on, Matt. What did you mean?
He was the third. I said he was the third worst actor.
The third worst actor. Yeah, and who are the other two?
The worst is what's her name, Moira Kelly, in the first series playing Mandy.
Oh, well, she gets binned at the end of the first series.
Genuinely bad.
She gets binned anyway.
Yeah. The second is Rob Lowe as Sam Seaborn.
How can you say that?
He's just not as good as the rest of them. He's the third worst. Name me another actor in the show who is worse than Rob Lowe.
I don't think any of them are bad. I think they're all
But if you're going to get into the nitty gritty of it and figure out who is your favourite, Rob Lowe is at the bottom of that pecking order, and then it's Dulé Hill. I'm not saying he's bad.
Dulé Hill's
the third worst in a very, very good bunch.
Well, I'm watching it again at the moment, and I think you're wrong. I think you should watch it again. I think he plays that character brilliantly. I really
do. Who's worse than him?
I don't have to look at things and decide who's worse. That's a twisted way to view the world, Matt. Do you sit on a train carriage and go, right, who would I kill first in here?
No, but I would. But you can go through it and go, who would you kill last? And they're the best. But then the one that you have to work back from that, okay. And the one that you would kill first will be the worst.
You know what the thing is, like if you do think like Matt's thinking, then I agree with you. Yeah, I actually have to agree with you. But I don't think they're bad actors, like Matt said. But if I'm thinking about who is the worst, and there's a gun to my head, I'd have to shout, Dulé Hill's third worst.
Exactly. There you go. Once you've gone through all your favourites, eventually you are left with the one you like the least.
Oh, there's so many I like less than Dulé.
Give me one.
All right, Alison Janney.
You're a dick. She's one of the top two.
That's ridiculous.
Hey, Matt, I'm not saying she's bad. I'm just saying, when I pick my favourites, she's at the bottom of the list.
Yes, but you're wrong and I'm right.
No, she's very good. But Charlie's got a tough part. It's a lot easier to play her part than Charlie's part.
Howell, go away and think about it. And find out if you actually agree or disagree with me.
I definitely disagree. I've already thought of that. I've watched it every day this week and just gone, what the fuck is Wandless talking about? I say it out loud.
Do you genuinely believe that Alison Janney is giving a worse performance than Dulé Hill?
No, I genuinely cannot say which one of them is worse.
Then I am right.
Thank you for joining us, Marcia. Thank you, Matthew. And as ever, thank you, Jamie. See you next week. What are we just? I think we're back onto Treme next week. So
yeah,
if you haven't,
about time we did Treme.
I'm going to be in France next week. So have a good time without me.
Lovely, south of France or
south of France, Montpellier. Yeah.
Montpellier. Excellent. And Marcia, are you going to be with us next week?
I'm not next week. I have an appointment. I'm sorry. But I, Treme, I'm not a good person to talk about it because I watched a lot and I did not get into it.
Oh, okay.
I tried really hard.
All right. Okay, fine. All right. See you next week for Treme, which, if you like music, you should like New Orleans, and that's where it's based. So let's see if we can find a way into that one. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank
let's,
you. Bye-bye.
Let's flash back to Matt's little wee now. Oh, there it. Oh.
Oh.
Nice. Charlie is the third worst.
Third worst.
Jesus.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.